The Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society Podcast.
Welcome to the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society, a podcast dedicated to suspense, crime, and horror stories from the golden age of radio. I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
We love mysterious old-time radio stories, but do they stand the test of time? That's what we're here to find out.
This week, we present The Lifeboat Mutiny from X-1, an episode selected by our Patreon supporter, Evan.
X-1 premiered on NBC Radio April 24th, 1955. The first 15 episodes recycled scripts from Dimension X, a short-lived science fiction anthology from 1950. The rest of the program's three-year run featured new scripts, some adapted from popular science fiction stories of the day and others originating from the minds of NBC staff writers Ernest Canoy and George Lefferts. In total, X-1 produced 126 episodes, including stories from Philip K. Dick, Frederick Pohl, Isaac Asimov, Theodore Sturgeon, and Ray Bradbury.
The Lifeboat Mutiny is based on a short story by Robert Sheckley. Over the course of his 50-year writing career, Sheckley penned 26 novels and more than 400 short stories. His work was known for its satirical edge and dark humor, prompting many contemporary readers to name Sheckley as a forerunner of Douglas Adams, author of the influential Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In Sheckley's obituary, the New York Times contrasted the Sheckleyan view of the future with the work of another science fiction luminary, Ray Bradbury, concluding, "While Mr. Bradbury poetically mourns the failure to live up to our dreams, Mr. Sheckley mocked the self-delusions that lead to dreams in the first place."
Beyond radio, Sheckley's stories appeared on both the small and big screen. His story Seventh Victim was adapted into the film The Tenth Victim in 1965, and his novel Immortality, Inc. was loosely, very loosely, adapted into the film Free Jack in 1992. After Sheckley's death in 2005, his short story Watchbird was adapted as the sixth and final episode of the ABC television series Masters of Science Fiction.
And now, let's listen to Lifeboat Mutiny from X-1, first broadcast September 11th, 1956.
It's late at night, and a chill has set in. You're alone, and the only light you see is coming from an antique radio. Listen to the sound coming from the speaker. Listen to the music, and listen to the voices.
Countdown for blast-off. X-5, 4, 3... 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
This week, the police chiefs of the country are meeting in Chicago for the 63rd annual conference of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Tonight, X-1 is proud to salute them as we present The Lifeboat Mutiny by Robert Sheckley.
Of course, we should have known better. In a way, we were asking for it, but frankly, we were short of credits and beggars can't be choosers. As a rule, I don't like second-hand equipment, not if I have to trust my life to it. But Joe, the interstellar junk man, can be pretty persuasive. He has an air of confidence when he walks down between the rows of antique jalopies on his lot and pats an airlock door lovingly or kicks at the ground gyros to show how firm they are. Joe exudes faith the way trees drip sap in the spring. And if you get too close, a little rubs off on you.
Yeah, you see, solid as a rock. Look at that plating. I'm telling you, this boat is a real buy.
She looks pretty old.
Sure, she's old.
Now, don't give us that story about it belonging to a little old lady who used it to flip to church on Sundays.
Now, look, boys, I'm not trying to unload something on you. I don't stand to make a nickel on this, but tell me the truth. Did you ever hear sweeter engines? And look at those servos.
Pretty old.
And that hull. I bet it's 500 years old and not a spot of corrosion on it. I'm telling you, you're lucky. It's a coincidence, you two fellas coming in. You need a lifeboat. And sitting right here waiting for you, like you was made for each other, is this baby.
Well, she certainly does seem rather nice. What do you think about it, Dick?
It does look pretty good. It's about what we need for the ocean survey work on Trident. But you know Joe.
They just don't build them this way anymore. Look at that propulsion unit. You couldn't dent it with a trip hammer. And note the capacity of the cooling system.
It looks good, but some of these old machines, you know, I just want to make absolutely sure it's safe.
Safe? Safe. He asked me if it's safe.
Is it?
Now, step inside. Go ahead. Step inside. All right. Push that button. Right there on the instrument panel.
This one?
Hey. I am lifeboat 324A.
Hey, the darn thing talks.
Yeah, and in English, too.
It's equipped with a universal translator. It's completely automatic. I told you, they just don't build them this way anymore. Go ahead. Push the button again.
I am lifeboat 324A. My primary purpose is to preserve those within me from peril and to maintain them in good health. At present, I am only partially activated.
Could anything be safer? This is no senseless hunk of metal. This boat will look after you. This boat cares.
I don't know. The idea of an emotional machine always gets me. I can't even stand those robot maitre d's. They keep slobbering over you every time you go into a restaurant with their tubes just pouring kindness and consideration.
You're a reactionary. We'll take it.
You won't be sorry. Boys, you just bought yourselves a lifeboat.
Joe delivered this assurance in the frank and open tones that had helped make him a millionaire several times over. It wasn't that he was dishonest. Far from it. All the flotsam he collected from anywhere in the universe worked. But ancient machines often had their own idea of how a job should be done. They tend to get peevish when forced into another routine.
Al, there she goes, lifeboat 324A. I got her down in the afterhold. I think she's in perfect condition. You know, it's just what we need for those oceans on Trident.
I hope so. The last thing I bought from Joe was an electric razor. Only it turned out that it came from Deneb 3, where they are slightly reptilian. And an electric razor is used to help them change their skin in the hot months. If you remember, I was in the hospital 3 months, and after the skin grafts, I don't know my ears from my elbow. This job we were on was to survey the planet Trident for a real estate speculator who bought it for subdivision. Trident was about the size of Mars, but with a far better climate. There was no native indigenous population, no poisonous plants, and no germ-borne diseases. As a matter of fact, apart from one small island and one small polar ice cap, the entire planet was covered with water. There was no real shortage of land. You could wade across some of Trident's several seas. Our firm had been hired to survey and plan a little mountain raising because the sector council frowned on selling building lots under 4 feet of water. We landed on Trident and launched the lifeboat.
Okay, I got the sandwiches in the water. Ready to cast off?
Aye, aye, sir. All mooring lines are on board.
All right, let's crank this swan boat up and get going.
Well, push that button.
Aye, aye.
I am lifeboat 324A. My primary purpose is to preserve those within me from peril and to maintain them in good health. At present, present, I am only partially activated. For full activity, press button 2.
Now, there it is, right next to the first one.
Well?
Something's going on back there. Sounds like motors warming up. Hey, that sounds like a short circuit somewhere. You know there's no wheel on this thing?
Oh, wait a minute. There's got to be some kind of tiller or control.
Well, you look. That's all there are, 2 buttons.
Well, then maybe she controls telepathically.
I'll try it.
Hey, 324A, go ahead slowly.
Ah, there she goes. That's it.
Starboard a little.
Wait a minute. I still don't like the sound of that. I bet there's a short somewhere. I'm going down to look for it with a circuit tester.
Don't louse anything up. I like a boat that works this way. Gives me a sense of power.
Hey, 324A, full speed ahead.
Arnold disappeared into the bilge with a circuit tester, and I handled the survey. Actually, our machines did all the work, tracing the major faults in the ocean bottom, locating the most promising volcanoes. When the survey was complete, the next stage would be turned over to the subcontractor. He would wire the volcanoes, seed the faults, and touch the whole thing off. After that, there'd be enough dry land on Trident for anybody. Now, by mid-afternoon, I figured we could knock off for a while. We ate our sandwiches, took a drink of water from the canteen, and then had ourselves a swim in Trident's clear, green water.
Hey, give me a hand up.
That was very refreshing.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to get this grease off with sandpaper, but I think I found the trouble. You see, the leads to the primary activator have been removed and the power cable's been cut.
Well, why would anyone do that?
Well, it might have been part of the decommissioning, but I got it hooked up now. Go ahead, hit the second button. Might as well have this thing working right.
Okay, here she goes.
Lifeboat 324A. I am now fully activated and able to protect my occupants from danger. Have faith in me. My action response tapes, both psychological and physical, have been prepared by the best scientific minds in all Drome.
That's more like it, huh? Gives you a feeling of confidence, doesn't it?
I suppose so. But where is Drome?
Gentlemen, try to think of me not as an unfeeling mechanism, but as your friend and comrade in arms. I understand how you feel. You have seen your ship go down, cruelly riddled by the implacable Hgen.
What ship? What's it talking about?
You have crawled aboard me, dazed, gasping from the poisonous fumes of water, half dead.
Oh, no, wait a minute. You mean that swim we took? You got it all wrong. We were just surveying.
Half dead, shocked, wounded, morale low. You were a little frightened, perhaps, and well, you might be. Separated from the Drome fleet and adrift upon an alien planet. A little fear is nothing to be ashamed of, gentlemen. But this is war, and war is a cruel business, and we have no alternative but to drive the barbaric Hgen across space.
There must be a reasonable explanation for all this.
Probably an old television script got mixed up in its response bank.
We better give it a complete overhaul. We can't listen to that stuff all day.
Well, we're about a quarter of a mile from the island. I'll tell you what. I'll take it down and clean the goo out of the contacts when we get there.
Hey, what's going on?
We're stopping. Hey, lifeboat!
Quiet, calm, trust in me. I am scanning the island.
What's he talking about, scanning the...
Better humor it. Lifeboat, that island's okay. We checked it personally.
Perhaps you did, but in modern lightning-quick warfare... Drone senses cannot be trusted. They are too limited, too prone to interpret what they wish. Electronic senses, on the other hand, are emotionless, eternally vigilant, and infallible within their limits.
But there isn't anything there.
I perceive a foreign spaceship on the island.
Oh, that's our ship.
It has no Drome markings.
Well, it hasn't any enemy markings either. I painted it myself.
In war, we must assume that what is not ours is the enemy's.
Oh.
I understand your desire to set foot on land again, but I take into account factors that a drome motivated by his emotions would overlook. Consider the apparent emptiness of the strategic bit of land, the unmarked spaceship put temptingly out for bait, the fact that our fleet is no longer in this vicinity.
All right, that's enough. Now, I'm tired of arguing with you. Go directly to that island. That's an order.
I cannot obey that order. You are unbalanced from your harrowing escape from death.
All right, enough of this nonsense. I'm just going to take that cutoff switch and...
Come to your senses, gentlemen. Only the decommissioning officer is empowered to turn me off. For your own safety, I must warn you not to touch any of my controls. You are mentally unbalanced. Later, when our position is safer, I will administer to you. Now my full energies must be devoted towards detection and escape from the enemy.
Where are we going?
To rejoin the drone fleet as soon as I can find it.
We sailed over the empty seas of Trident for the rest of the afternoon and far into the night. At about midnight, we sat in the cabin sharing our last sandwich. The lifeboat was still rushing madly over the waves, its every electronic sense alert, searching for a fleet that had existed 500 years ago upon an entirely different planet.
Oh, why didn't I pack more sandwiches?
Do you ever hear of these drones?
Yeah, vaguely. They were non-human, lizard-evolved creatures.
Mm.
Yeah, they lived on the sixth planet of some little system near, Capella. The race died out over a century ago.
Mm-hmm. And the Hagen. What about them?
Also lizard, same story. Mm. Wasn't a very important war, you know. All the combatants are gone except this lifeboat, apparently.
And us. We've been drafted as drone soldiery. You think we can reason with this, Tub?
No, I don't see how. As far as this boat is concerned, the war is still on. It can only interpret data in terms of that premise.
It's probably listening in on us now.
No, I don't think so.
Hmm?
See, it's not really a mind reader. Its perception senses are geared only to thoughts aimed specifically at it.
Yes, sirree. They just don't build them this way anymore. Ooh, I wish I could get my hands on Joe.
Well, you know, it's actually a very interesting situation. The machine is acting very logically upon no longer existent conditions. Therefore, you could say that the machine is the victim of a systematized delusion.
You mean the lifeboat is just plain insane?
Well, I believe paranoia would be the proper designation. Ah, but it'll end pretty soon.
Why?
It's obvious. The boat's prime objective is to keep us alive. Our sandwiches are gone, and the only other food is on the island. I figure it'll have to take a chance and go back.
Gentlemen, at present, I am unable to locate the drone fleet. Therefore, I am turning back to scan the island again. Fortunately, there are no enemies in this immediate area, so I can devote myself to your care.
Oh, you see, it's about time you got around to us. We're hungry.
Feed us.
Of course. Immediately. There you are. On the tray.
What's that?
That looks like clay.
Ooh, it smells like machine oil. Hey, what's it supposed to be?
That is giesel.
Hmm?
It's the staple diet of the drone people. I can prepare it in 16 different ways.
Oh. Try it.
All right. It tastes like clay coated with machine oil. We can't eat that.
Of course you can. An adult drone consumes 5.3 pounds of giesel a day and cries for more.
Now listen, we are not drones. We are humans, an entirely different species. The war you think you're fighting ended 500 years ago. We can't eat giesel. Our food is on the island.
Ah, yes. Your delusion is a common one among fighting men. It is an escape fantasy, a retreat from an intolerable situation. Gentlemen, I beg you, face reality.
You face reality, or I'll have you dismantled bolt by bolt.
Threats do not disturb me. I know what you've been through. Possibly you've suffered some brain damage from your exposure to poisonous water.
Poisonous?
To drones.
If absolutely necessary, I am also equipped to perform physical brain therapy. It is a drastic measure, but there can be no coddling in time of war. You see? You need not worry. All my scalpels are razor sharp and ready for immediate action.
Oh, scalpels, huh? Well, we're feeling better already. It's a fine-looking batch of Giesel, isn't it, Arnold?
Oh, delicious.
Nothing is too good for our boys in uniform.
Hmm.
Do try a little.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, that's delicious.
Good. I am moving toward the island now, and I promise you in a little while you will be more comfortable.
Why?
The temperature here is unbearably hot. It is amazing you haven't gone into a coma. Any other drone would have. Soon I'll have it down to drone norm of 20 degrees below zero. And now I'll play our national anthem.
Arnold?
What?
I'm cold.
Well, you should be very comfortable. Drones live at 20 below zero. We're drones and no back talk.
Those cooling tubes are all frosted up.
Yeah, I just wrote my name in frost in the porthole. Hey, wait a minute.
Hmm?
Wait a minute. I got an idea. Just follow my lead.
Why not? Lead on, fellow drone.
Give me the canteen.
What are you doing?
Just gonna get a little exercise. Gotta stay fit, you know.
That is true.
Here you are, boy. Catch!
Look out, that canteen's heavy.
Just throw it right back, boy. Just heave it right in. Come on, let's see your curve.
Be careful with that receptacle. It's filled with a deadly poison. Water.
Oh, we'll be careful. Here we go!
Bad shot, old man.
Oh, how careless of me. I seem to have broken the cooling tubes. Cooling fluid all over the floor.
I should have taken precaution against internal accidents. It won't happen again. But the situation is very serious. I cannot repair the cooling tube myself. I'm unable to properly cool the boat.
Say, that's tough. Now, if you'll just drop us on the island...
That is impossible. My first duty is to preserve your lives, and you couldn't live long in the climate of this planet. But I'm going to take necessary precautions to ensure your safety.
What are you going to do?
There is no time to waste. I will scan the island once more. If our drone forces are not present, we will go to the one place on the planet that can sustain drone life.
What place?
The southern polar ice cap. The climate there is almost ideal. 30 degrees below zero. And of course, I must guard against any further internal accidents. So, I will lock you gentlemen in the cabin.
Think.
I am thinking. Nothing's coming out.
Well, we've got to get off when he reaches the island. It'll be our last chance.
Now, look. We know his internal scanning isn't very good. When we reach the island, maybe we could cut his power cable.
Oh, you couldn't get within 5 feet of it. He's got an electric charge on all the controls.
Mm. I am now scanning the island.
Place looks fine today.
Oh, sure does. I'll bet our forces are dug in underground.
They are not. I scan to a depth of 100 feet.
Well, under the circumstances, I think we should examine it a little more carefully.
It is deserted. I cannot let you endanger your lives by going ashore. Drome needs her soldiers, especially sturdy, heat-resistant types like you.
We like this climate.
Spoken like a patriot. I know you must be suffering, but now I am going to the South Pole to give you veterans the rest you deserve.
Wait a minute. You don't understand. We're operating under special orders. We weren't supposed to disclose them to any vessel below the rank of Super Dreadnought.
We're a suicide squad.
Yes, yes, that's right. Especially trained for hot climate war.
Our orders are to land and secure that island for the Drome forces.
I didn't know that.
You weren't supposed to. After all, you're only a lifeboat.
Land us at once.
I couldn't guess, you know. All right. We'll head for the island.
Arnold, it's going to work.
Why not, as long as we tell him the truth?
The beach is only 50 yards away.
No. No.
No what?
I cannot do it.
What do you mean? This is war. Orders.
I know, but I cannot obey. A different type of vessel should have been chosen for this mission. But not a lifeboat.
You must think of our country. Think of the barbaric Hagen.
It is electronically impossible for me to carry out your orders. My prime directive is to protect my occupants from harm. That order is stamped on my every tape, giving priority above all others. I cannot let you go to your certain death.
You'll be court-martialed for this. I'll have you broken down to a dinghy.
I regret to say I must operate within my limitations. I must take you to the safety of the South Pole.
Listen, you crazy tin can. Let me at those controls. I'll...
Please, do not attempt any more destruction. I know how you feel.
Wait a minute, Arnold, old friend. Since we cannot accomplish our mission, we cannot ever again face our comrades. Death before dishonor. Hand me the canteen.
No, don't. That's water. It is a deadly poison. Don't. Don't.
Too late. Arnold, it's your turn.
We, who are about to die, salute you.
We die for glorious Drome.
That goes for me, too.
Speak to me. Speak to me.
Lie still, you idiot.
There is no known antidote. If only I could contact the hospital ship. Speak to me. Are you still alive? Answer me. Here. Here. Perhaps if you eat some geisel. Dead. 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 I will now read the burial service. Great Spirit of the universe, take into your custody the souls of these your servants. Although they died by their own hand, still it was in the service of their country, fighting for home and hearth. Judge them not harshly for their impious deed. Rather, blame the spirit of war that inflames and destroys the spirit of all Drome. And now, by the authority vested in me, by the Drome fleet, and with all reverence, I commend their bodies to the deep.
Ow!
Shut up.
Accept them, O ocean, for many brave hearts are at slumber in the deep.
Float quietly.
What's the lifeboat doing? It's still hanging around.
Just pray the Dromes didn't believe in cremation.
Sleep quietly, brave spirits. I will now play the Drome national anthem.
Well, there she goes.
Where?
To the South Pole. To wait for the Drome fleet.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features The Man Who Ate the World by Frederick Pohl. This is the story of a civilization which flowed with milk and honey and of a man whose tragedy was that he had not drowned at birth. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Lifeboat Mutiny, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Robert Sheckley and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Leon Janney, Mandel Kramer, William Redfield, and John McGovern. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
That was The Lifeboat Mutiny from X-1 here on the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society podcast. Once again, I'm Eric.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Joshua.
And that was selected by Patreon supporter Evan, who made that request for us to listen and analyze that particular episode. Thank you so much, Evan, for your request and also for being a Patreon, as always. All right, so let's break this thing down. Shekley, we're familiar with from having done Watchbird on stage.
Yep.
And forgive me, the adaptation's done by Joshua?
Joshua did.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah, you did the adaptation for the radio drama of that. And it's we've done it many times, and it's been a huge success, and it's been a lot of fun. Would I be overstepping by saying Shekley is an acquired taste?
No. One of the reasons I enjoyed the science fiction from this era is how it can be hilariously dated one moment and jaw-droppingly prescient the next.
The Veldt has
a ton
of that back and forth.
Yep. Yeah, where you're like, well, this is ridiculous by today's standards. And oh, no, this is today.
Right.
And so that's what I like about Shekley's work. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I don't think there's anyone else in this era that's so good at being kind of ridiculous and flippant and silly, but still tackling bigger cultural anxieties at the same time.
Right. This is a trope. And one of the issues is not the right word. Why I don't jump up and down and say, oh, this is great. Okay. So let's just start there. Is because of the trope of the computer coming to life or being
a sort of technological rebellion of a computer.
The robot is alive.
Yes.
And I know putting it in context hasn't been done a lot at this point.
I would say it's malfunctioning. It's not that it's alive.
Right.
It's just
technology is bad.
But it has a persona that it.
Yeah.
Yes, but that's
and making
that's
choices.
A feature, not a bug.
And also right? making choices, though.
Yeah, and it's supposed to. Where
right.
it goes wrong is that it believes it's in a different scenario than
right.
the one it's actually in.
Right. It still thinks the war's going on.
Yeah.
Like that episode of Gilligan's Island where that guy still
Well, that's a Laurel and Hardy short that's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about it before, too. Where
I've seen that. Yeah.
Where the war's over and
Stan Laurel's
still sitting in a trench eating cans of beans.
Yes, yes. Well, because that begins with that guy goes, we're going to go attack. You stay here. And they run out of the trench and that jumps ahead 5 years or whatever. And he has made a house in this trench and he hasn't moved. Anyway, I'm so sorry we're talking about that. That's a great Laurel and Hardy short. Yes, go on.
What I enjoy about it, and I think what makes this different from just a computer or a form of technology that won't do what you want it to do, is the very specific irony of the premise that too much safety can be a dangerous thing. That's
right.
where I think the Shekleyan outlook comes to life, that irony there.
Yeah.
The sort of trope that I, not trope, theme that I plugged into was not so much the excess of safety, but the added burden that safety nets can become. Specifically, I was thinking of like an insurance. Like you have an accident, you have all this sort of problems in your life as a result of this accident. So you have paid for years and years for insurance, and then that is an added nightmare is trying to collect insurance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which I suppose is another way of saying the safety. But it's not so much that it is too much safety as the safety you have is just another threat.
Right.
And then to pivot. I think part of what makes this will decide how much you enjoy this or not is the distinctive way that these characters respond to their situation, which is just on the cusp of comedy versus horror.
Mm-hmm.
That they respond as though they're in a comedy, even though the situation's indicating you're in a horror story.
Yeah, I get your point, but I feel like the situation is so absurd that they're eye-rolling response seems appropriate, and the idea that it's a souped-up space boat that we're in. They never seem to really believe it's going to kill them. And that, again, I though, to your point, could be why someone doesn't enjoy it, but I don't think they're attempting to create suspense and failing. I don't think that's the goal.
And to finish that, like that, this was not to say I didn't enjoy it. I did. But I enjoyed it largely with the comedic beats more mm-hmm. so than the story engaged me.
Yes. Because, again, I think it's sorting through, and that's part of the just intellectual fun for me to recognize these jokes that would have hit much harder in 1956. Mm-hmm. Not that they're bad jokes. I am sure imagining a future in which untrustworthy used car salesmen are now selling used spaceships was far more cutting than it is
closer
today.
To home.
Yeah, now it's cute. You know, like, oh, I see what you did there. and I don't fault him for that because he wrote it when he wrote it. I also think things like the fact that they work for a real estate developer who wants to subdivide the planet. When you're writing this on the in the decade that invented suburban sprawl, mm-hmm. that's a sharp jabbing joke. Now you probably go, what's a subdivision? I mean, a lot of people listening to it, right?
Right.
So it's fun to parse out those jokes from things that I think have more life to them.
The national anthem will never not be funny to me. I could hear that over and over and over again.
The national anthem killed me. And it killed me for a very specific reason that I'm going to... I know we rarely play something in the middle of our discussion.
Oh, my.
I have to play this for you. Are you guys familiar with Raymond Scott,
yes.
the musician?
No. Nope.
Those of you
know his work very yes. well.
Okay.
He was a composer and band leader and early pioneer of electronica. His composition was used in hundreds of Looney Tunes cartoons.
Oh.
In the background. Powerhouse is probably his most famous, and if I played it for you, you would instantly.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
That's Raymond Scott, and Tim and I will be recording an album later.
Yeah, right. That was really good, you guys.
Thank you, sir.
But anyway, in the '60s, when he got more into electronica, he released a series of electronic music albums meant for infants called Soothing Sounds for Babies, and it is some of the least soothing songs you could ever hear. I have all three CDs worth of it. And it sounds terrifyingly like the Drome National Anthem. I also know that Evan does some music composition himself, so I have to play this little bit. I think it's cued to the spot.
It doesn't have the boing.
It doesn't have the comic boing, but there's a connection there.
Yeah.
So maybe the national anthem was for drone babies.
Here's the deeply, deeply unwarranted connection that this had, because you were talking about the drawing. I'm in the middle of game mastering a Traveller RPG. And if you know Traveller real well, like I'm sure the both of you, I can gauge by your shocked and horrified expressions, that the drawing are a race in Traveller. And it's a, they're sort of winged little creatures, but it's a really important two. The particular game that I'm running, for those of you who are listening, like, well, give me more details, Tim. It is the Mongoose updated version, their Into the Rift sort of campaign setting. We just got through the island sector, and we're going to be moving into the Endeavor. So that was my background in listening to this when they were talking about the drawing of, like, yeah, I'm with you. I know what's happening here.
Eric, do you have a really personal tangent that you can share that
I have
doesn't
no
impress us the way ours did not impress?
I don't have any idea what he just said. I'm not kidding. I'm not even trying to be funny. But like, those are all. What are you talking about? I don't even know the connection.
It's so thin. So thin.
But I'm, you know, we're here for you, brother. We are here for you to get it off your chest. I will say this about the national anthem music, going back to that real quick. It is grating and, you know, it's not enjoyable. You wouldn't want to listen to that. But it's better than all the other X-1 interstitial music.
But again, I'm going to make this argument I've argued over and over again. You just don't like 1950s incidental music because it's not specific to X-1.
I don't
and
like
it's
it.
No more dated or incongruous than organ music from the 1940s.
Which I listen to, like in my car right now. If you were in my car right now, I listen to Muzak, literally. But when it's in this science fiction show that they have these moments where they allude to dialogue-wise or production-wise that this is a suspenseful moment, they follow it up with incorrect music. That is my rip to me.
Well, this was comic, so yes. I thought this would go down a little smoother.
It did.
To slam X-1.
Yeah, I was just trying to take a shot.
Well, I'm going to say this.
A sucker punch on X-1.
Evan is very aware of your dislike for the X-1 incidental music.
Yeah.
And he brought that up requesting this. And we'll play it at the end of the podcast. But he did a little house dance remix of the X-1 theme. That's
nice.
Quite impressive in the hopes that perhaps you might prefer that.
Can I say something else about the national anthem music?
Yeah.
When sci-fi tries to develop what music may sound like in the future or on a distant world in a various wide range of movies or radio shows or what have you, right? It almost always fails. This is where I'm going to get in a lot of trouble. For example, I hate that bar scene in Star Wars so much. Because of the music.
The jizz wailing?
Huh? The what? What did you say?
Jizz wailing. It's the type of music they're playing in the cantina.
It's literally swing music. In other words, I always think, why don't you do something way outside the box? Why don't you do something like, oh, that's music to them? That's crazy. But instead of bum, 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 ba da 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 da. So you're doing Glenn Miller songs. Okay, great. So you've not done any kind of thought put into that.
I can't believe we're now sidetracked to defending Star Wars to Eric, but I'm going to do it anyway. That whole scene is about how everything is exactly like on Earth.
That's cowboys in a bar listening to Glenn
Miller. That's the entire point of that is that, it's aliens and wizards with lightsabers and all that, but they still go hang out in a bar and there's music playing and they get in bar fights.
Yeah, and
that's the point of it.
That's why I hate it. So another world should look like another world. It should be weird, right? Okay, anyway. So I always
on a tangent record. Yeah. We can do it. We have the most tangents we've ever had on a podcast.
I've always had this opinion. Oh, this is music from the future or from another world in whatever movie, whatever thing. And it always fails. This is perfect. This is thank you for doing something that doesn't sound anything like music that we know it and trying to create something that would be otherworldly or futuristic. So that's my favorite part of this show is that national anthem because of that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Good point.
Thank you.
Way to bring us back to the actual story we're talking about. To that point, I mentioned some of the 1950s era jokes that aren't as sharp today as they were 70 years ago. I can't believe he didn't write jokes that lasted 70 years. I
can't believe it was 70 years ago.
Yes.
Right.
But I thought here are the ideas that I think stand the test of time. Well, in our culture war moment, I think just the phrase that the lifeboat's problem is that it can only interpret data on a single premise was maybe one of the most insightful like sentences I've read in a long time. That's like not just the lifeboat's problem. That's like everybody's problem.
Right, right.
But also just some of the other fascinating ideas that come up in here. One of the guys mentions the war between the Dromes and the Hagan and says it wasn't even a very important war, which I thought had that effect to remind us of the sobering scope of history and all these things that are life and death to us in this moment, if we're lucky, will become an historical footnote.
Or if we're unlucky.
Yeah. In general, I think the lifeboat, as well as the lizard razor that I think Dave mentions, that idea of technological relativism, this technology was meant for a different species with different needs. The idea that he tried to use a razor that was supposed to help a reptile with its shed, and he ends up in the hospital. Like, those are like great sci-fi ideas. And I like that Sheckley has so much imagination that he often like will toss off what would be a premise of another short story in a line or two. These guys are like, do you have another tangent?
No, just in my head. It'd be better in the canteen after listening to Powerhouse. Well,
there is a little bit of a Raymond Scott quality to that jizz whaling.
Jizz whaling.
Not making that up, man.
That's also a movie you should not Google.
I know it sounds surprising, but that's actually safe to Google at work. It'll just bring up the cantina scene in Star Wars.
This is not what I was looking for. thanks, Evan. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Evan. Let's vote.
I thought from a Minnesotan perspective that the fact that they were in grave danger of being in 20 degrees below zero was kind of funny.
Right. Right.
I thought that Tim would be very excited because the phrase Suicide Squad is mentioned.
Yeah, yes. Yes, that did perk up the, like, oh, okay, Suicide Squad, you need comic books.
Did you just say no words and then comic books?
It was a little Scooby-Doo there.
Yeah.
I think my favorite line in here, and I think it is a legitimately laugh out loud funny line, even if it's maybe a dad joke, I'll have you broken down to a dinghy. Mainly because the word dinghy is always funny.
Always right. Funny.
Not as funny as just whaling, but
you know, if you really want to laugh hard, put someone on dinghy duty.
See? And I didn't even want to laugh. I couldn't help myself.
My favorite aspect of this that I want to steal and use somewhere else is the idea of a character that can hear you when you talk to him,
but not about him. Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting point. That would be me, though.
But again, that's like Sheckley has so many like good ideas. He just, I think it's that era too where you're making money by how many words you can put on a page, how quickly.
Yeah.
And he's just almost wasting ideas a little bit here and there because that is a really good idea. Maybe it's just me, but I somehow doubt that robot maitre d's could be any more fake and annoying than flesh and blood maitre d's. But again, that's a little prescient, right? He complains about a robot maitre d' like we now complain when we get an automated voice and we're yelling at the phone.
Oh, yeah.
When we're trying to call our bank and we're going, can I just talk to a human?
Yeah, I do it all the time.
Operator!
Yes. Well, suddenly everyone talks like a Dalek. Operator!
I think that speaks volumes about our tastes, Joshua, that you go places that have a maitre d'. I don't think I've ever eaten anywhere.
You haven't had a McMaitre d'?
Yeah.
I've never eaten anywhere with a
maitre
d'. That's
what they call those self-help kiosks at McDonald's.
Have you actually ever eaten in a place that there's a maitre d'?
Technically, anyone who is standing at that little desk and seats you when you walk in, even if it's
those are
a,
hostess.
Even if it's a country kitchen, that's
but those
maitre
are hosts.
D-esque.
It's maitre d'esque, but I mean an actual maitre d', like they call themselves that. They have a tux on. They have a
not
weird...
regularly, but yes, I've been
to
a restaurant.
I went to prom.
Yeah.
I have not. I've
you
never
go to prom?
Seen it. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Rent a limo? Go get some dinner? Be nice.
Put on some jizz whaling.
You like this?
Can we vote?
I found this enchanting under the sea.
Oh, it's the final countdown. Are we voting?
Sure.
Tim.
I think this stands the test of time. Even though I do agree that some of the jokes do not land like they would have at the time, but the satire overall holds up. I won't call it a classic. It's so hard with satire both to hold up and to be like, this is a tremendous achievement artistically. But it's good. I will not call it a tremendous achievement artistically.
I really enjoyed this. I appreciate Sheckley's light-hearted approach, like I said, to high concept. And he can be both silly and insightful at the same time. I always really appreciate that. I also would not call it a classic, even among Sheckley's X-1 adaptations. I think I prefer, like, The Skulking Permit is a great Sheckley adaptation from X-1. Protection is another, which is another kind of anti-paternalism piece. So maybe that's why I picked up on the irony about safetyism, because I think that is a bugaboo with Sheckley. This is just my wheelhouse. I love this decade of radio. I love this decade of science fiction. So it's kind of like the radio version of Mexican food. I love amazing, authentic Mexican food. But if I have to go to fast food, it's still going to be Mexican because I really like the cheap, easy stuff too.
Wow, that was quite a tangent. But I agree with you so much.
This is our tangent episode. Yeah,
but I agree with you so much on Mexican food.
I mean, if you can get a place that has a maitre d'.
Right. Mexican, it doesn't matter what. I like good. Yeah, man, bring it. All right, I refuse to vote, and here's why.
All right.
This is a new one. I refuse to vote. It's not fair for me to vote. This is not aimed at me at all. This is just, it obviously strikes a chord with people, and it's interesting and compelling and thought-provoking, and you like it. It's so not aimed at me that I'm not on board with. So how can I analyze it, right? How can I sit here and go, oh, I didn't like it because of this? I didn't like it, but this is the same thing as look, I don't like The Grateful Dead, but 8 billion people can't be wrong, right?
Yes, they can.
No,
this
they can't.
This is where I'll disagree.
No, they can't because they're obviously talented and good, right? This is obviously a good piece of this style, this genre.
8 million people on drugs. I think that's the factor you're missing.
This is your wheelhouse, right? You guys like this. Yeah. It's your stuff.
But I also think parts of it doesn't work, but that's the fun of it for me.
But none of it works for me. So why? None of it works
for
me.
Just the national anthem.
Just the national anthem is brilliant.
Can you rate the national anthem then? At least?
Classic sci-fi music.
I think we should adopt it.
Yes. That should be the opening of our show.
I think more and more that is a worthy national anthem for this country.
I think it's just our podcast. I think that should be the opening song.
Play the national anthem. Everyone should float.
Right.
Several inches above the ground.
Now you're doing Dune jokes because that guy floats, that guy in
Dune. That's the one guy. No, I'm doing it jokes.
Oh, all right. I'm trying.
Oh, man. Are we really going to end on a unsuccessful tangent? Wah, wah, wah.
Wet trombone.
Tangent Tim. And a callback.
Callback to last week's episode. Tim, tell them stuff.
Hey, if you're still listening, please go visit ghoulishdelights.com. You can vote in polls. Let us know what you think of the style of satire, X-1, and the sci-fi, and the view of the future, and all of that. And we will take that into account.
No, we won't.
It'll be recorded for posterity. And you can also, while you're at the website, check out our store, get yourself some Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society swag, including some fan creations, which are awesome. Thank you, fans who created art.
Right.
And you can link to our Patreon page.
Yes, go to patreon.com/themorals and become a supporter of this podcast like Evan. You too could inspire many tangents, and you might choose an episode in which we barely talk about. But thank you so much to all our patrons for supporting this podcast, and thank you so much to Evan for recommending this one.
If you'd like to see the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society performing live, the theater company does and performs classic recreations of classic old-time radio shows and a lot of her own original work as we perform audio drama live on stage. You want to find out where we're performing and what we're performing every month, sometimes more than once a month, go to ghoulishdelights.com, and there you will see how to get tickets and what we're performing. And if you can't make it to our performance, as a Patreon, we supply to you Patreons either video and or audio of our performances, so it's another perk of being a Patreon. But try to come, because food's always great, and we'd love to hang out with you and say hi. It's great to meet you all. All right, what's coming up next?
Next, we have another listener request. We will be listening to an episode of The Shadow entitled The Gorilla Man. Until then,
look out!
And now, here is Evan's remix of the theme from X-1.
Time and space, new dimensions in time and space, X-1-5.